Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Oh, it's that time again for this podcast that we do.
Oh, for this
Friday.
So it is.
Noon Eastern that we do it. Then people hear it later. Because that's how podcasts work.
That's how podcasts work.
Apple, that's how it works. Apple's results came out yesterday. Yesterday was a results day. Again, Thursday results days, I don't like them as much as I like the Tuesday results days. Got to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. It's too late in the week. It's like everything is piled up on you by then.
Yeah.
Also, like I was writing my Macworld. I had to turn in my Macworld column before the results came out. And I don't think it was necessarily about stuff that was directly addressed in the call, but there's always that possibility, right? That you write something and something comes up that changes an interpretation or what have you. So I always feel like that's a little dicey. Not as bad as writing something like right before, you know, an event announcement,
sure,
or something like that, but still.
Yeah. No, it's an issue. I delayed my Macworld column and wrote it afterward, like I usually do. It was easier on Tuesdays because that's actually when I wrote it, when I usually write it. But results. I mean, again, record results. I think my gut feeling is that my gut feeling is the holiday quarter is going to be not bad, but not as good as it generally is for Apple.
I would agree.
For a couple of reasons. One is the economy around the world is terrible, and so holiday spending is probably going to be down. Tim Cook put on a happy face and said, "Oh well, you know, we'll get some medical interventions here that'll make it that'll help open up the economy." You know, and I'm thinking by Christmas, I don't think so. I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, even if such a thing existed, it's not going to be deployed in such a way that people are probably going to feel like going to a mall.
Right. Certainly. Right. Even online shopping, like the economy part of it just is there. So they asked, do you think this is going to be that some of the, you know, record essentially iPad and Mac sales are going to be brought forward from back to school and the holidays? And what they said was they don't think it will be from back to school, which I think is interesting. They obviously have some data on that because they know what happened in July, right? They're looking at data that's not in the report, that's from the current month, from the current quarter that's going on. And so they think no. And I think, okay, I'll take their word at that. I mean, there are schools that are going back. There are schools that have to do distance learning and are investing in technology, or parents who are investing in technology for their kids because they're going to have to distance learn in the fall. Got it. Great. Holidays, though, they when asked about that, they basically said, well, you know, we're only going to project one quarter out, so talk to us in 3 months and we'll tell you how we feel about the holiday quarter. And I think the answer is going to be it's going to be, again, it's traditionally Apple's strongest quarter, so it won't necessarily be bad, but I would bet you it's the worst holiday quarter Apple has had in a while.
Yeah, that seems plausible. I think it'll certainly be down from last year. That seems pretty clear, unless there is something, you know, bananas happening. Like,
yeah, well, they might
have. The government decides to, you know, give a lot of people a lot of money or what have you.
Thinking, you know, they will probably drive a lot of sales from new iPhones, although the new iPhones are going to be late too, because they said they're going to ship a few weeks after.
Ooh, that's always a rare move for them to tip their hand, but smart, because, you know, everyone's going to be expecting them in that time frame because that is when traditionally they deliver it.
And all their suppliers have said that they have a major vendor who is going to ship late, and so everybody was asking that question.
Yeah, and it's also a point where it's like, I think, given the level of iPhone growth flattening off over the last several years, it's no longer really something they need to be coy about. Oh, there's a new iPhone coming, right? Like, they don't need to necessarily batten down the hatches. We all know there's a new iPhone coming. Nobody. The surprise news would be if there was no new iPhone coming.
Yeah.
That would be a big deal, but everybody knows it's coming. So at least giving a heads up on the front that it's going to be delayed a little bit from usual, that's probably just to adjust expectations. I think it's smart.
In my Macworld column, I talked about one way that I think maybe they tipped their cap a little bit towards something that's about to happen, which is they praised the sales of the iPhone SE and said that it's selling well to switchers and also to people who like a smaller phone. And, you know, the rumors are that one of the iPhone 12s is going to be smaller than the iPhone SE. Mm-hmm. And so I have a hard time not looking at that as a little bit of them seeding the the expectations of the analysts, so that next time when they announce that product and they're like, you know, people really like a smaller phone and we got them a smaller phone, then the analysts will be like, oh yeah, people do like a smaller phone because they heard Apple say it three. I mean, I think that's part of the game they're playing here.
I thought it was nice of Tim Cook to tip his hat to John Moltz like that. That was very kind.
Yeah, it's nice. John Moltz and Philip Michaels and all the other people we know who like the little phones.
Yeah, frankly, I think I'm trying to remember what phone my mom is still using her SE, which replaced like her 5S. So, you know, keeping that same form factor. And obviously, whatever they put out this year will be, you know, newer than those phones and probably still bigger, but, you know, more approachable in size than any previous iPhone in the last several years.
Well, since the original the SE, six. Which was the was the 5 model type. So yeah, since the 6 went bigger, because the 10 is bigger than the 10 class is bigger than the 6, which is now the SE class. So getting something smaller than the current, you know, iPhone 6 class phone is going to be the smallest iPhone, and that is the rumor for the iPhone 12. So
I'm here for that. I'm not sure if I'm a person who wants a phone that small again. I'm very happy with the most part with the 11 Pro size, but I certainly know a lot of people who like it, and I think it's smart for Apple to do it because there's an unaddressed market share. There are plenty of complaints from people who are like, every phone is too big, right? Like, it's not that all phones need to be small, but some phones could be small.
Yeah, yeah. I've come to like the iPhone 10 size, but I have to admit being a little bit intrigued by it, because I remember going to the iPhone 10 and thinking, I really love this phone a lot, but it's kind of a little too big. I really did like the iPhone 6 size. I thought that when they went from 5 to 6, I was like, oh yeah, this is good.
Right. And when, that made a big difference.
And when I went from whatever, the 7 to the 10, I was like,
And also, you know, at the same time, the displays have gotten so much larger that even a smaller phone with a display that is kind of edge to edge, like the 10, 11 models, will feel a lot bigger.
Or you get a screen that is still a decent size, but a little bit small, and then it's really small because it also doesn't have like bezels and stuff around it. No, it's going to be fascinating to see. But that was another little tidbit that I kind of pulled out of the hat there. Also, I wanted to mention, so services and wearables continue their march. Services threw off 15% again, which is like they've been in the teens of percent growth year over year for the last couple of years. And wearables had its lowest growth quarter in 2.5 years. But I think the lesson there is essentially that you can't keep growing at 30 to 40% every quarter. You can't. You can't do that. And so it feels like wearables is slowing down a little bit. Although Tim Cook said that part of it was that they sell a lot of Apple Watches in retail stores because people want to try them on and look at the bands and stuff like that. And that was they took a huge hit from that this quarter.
I believe that. And I think there's also an argument that a lot of people not leaving the house or feeling locked down, like they talked a little bit about the fact that, you know, iPads and Macs are things that people use when they're in their home, whether it's for work or learning or, you know, entertainment and stuff like that, whereas, you know, I think the AirPods especially are something that people tend to wear when they're out and about,
right?
And that's not surprising. And the watch, to a certain extent, I think that, you know, some people, the fitness thing, right? Like, if there are a lot of people not going to gyms, for example, then there might be that might take a hit for fitness stuff. Obviously, people do still work out outdoors and things like that, but like it cuts out a part of that market. You know, just activity tracking and stuff, people might be inclined to do it, but it also might take a hit just because people aren't going out and doing as much active stuff.
Yeah. But the iPad and the Mac were great. That's the funny thing. And I think I said the headline is like, for once, the iPad and the Mac are the story. The Mac, 22% year over year growth, is its best in a couple of years, best quarter. Yeah. And the iPad, iPad's best quarter in like, 6 years, other than, well, it's actually, 4.5 years since they had that level of sales, and they made more money than any non-holiday quarter in 6 years. Like, it was a really good iPad quarter and a very good Mac quarter, and I think there are two reasons, one of which is the pandemic, and they talked about it 3 months ago, which is there are a lot of people who were putting off a Mac purchase or an iPad purchase while they were working at home, And then the pandemic hits and they're like, I need to have a better, and companies did this too. They bought for their employees, mm-hmm. but like for also individuals are like, I need to have a better thing at home. Like I got by before, but if I'm going to be home all the time, I need to get a better setup. Right, and I right, think that drove right. a lot of sales from the consumer side and from the business side. And then the other part is keyboards.
Yeah, keyboards.
Keyboards, yeah. Like good keyboards on the MacBook Air and MacBook Pro. That was this quarter. And iPad Pro, new model, and that Magic Keyboard on the iPad side. I feel like it was going to be a good quarter anyway, but the pandemic part of it, I really believe that's a factor, right? Like this is the like, oh, I'm home. And I mean, I've seen that Lauren already had a MacBook Air, but you know, she used it a little bit and now she uses it all the time. I mean, when she was 100% at home, she used it 100% of the time. And it's like, oh, this computer's way more important than it used to be. And right. yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and education again. I mean, lots of kids who are suddenly switching to having to be in Zoom, and maybe they have older devices that aren't as good for that kind of thing. So, you know, I certainly think an iPad is still a fairly, you know, cost efficient way of having, you know, kids get access to things like Zoom as well as all their other, you know, stuff they need for homework and classwork, etc. So I think that combined with, I don't know how many people are buying, you know, iPad Pros with Magic Keyboards for their kids, but certainly iPads, like
yeah.
the low end, you know, normal iPad is still a great machine. And a lot of that, you know, is sufficient for what they need for educational purposes. So there were some places, I think, where there were like school districts even that were buying and distributing iPads.
Yeah, sure. That, students, that so, there's yeah, lots
that,
of
that helps.
Lots of this stuff is going on, and I mean, honestly, and I saw somebody comment on this on Twitter, and I thought it was really smart. Which is, Apple did feel almost a little chagrined about how yeah. well they did this quarter, because like Tim Cook's like, all right, so we did great, but I just want to point out everything is awful.
yeah, keep it in perspective.
yeah, yeah. I just thought that was really. Really funny that they did seem a little embarrassed about it, because there is the argument to be made that they kind of benefited from the pandemic in the sense that people needed new equipment to do distance learning and remote working, and therefore they bought Apple stuff. And they, you know, they talked about that a little bit, but they also said that, you know, Apple is also donating money and setting up foundations and doing stuff that they want to make, you know, they want to give back to. They definitely don't want to be viewed as being almost like a pandemic profiteer. Yeah. yeah.
Right. But I mean, at the same time, people need the stuff and they're going to buy the stuff. So it's not like Apple not being there would have
well, yeah,
made.
People do yeah, need the yeah. stuff, right? Like everybody's like, oh my God, I'm going to be at home. I need a new laptop, right? It's like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's not as much of a case, I feel like, in the same way that people talk about Amazon, where it's like, you know, for Amazon, there's a lot of stuff where it's like, well, you could be, assuming you have local places that are open, you could be buying from local places that compete with Amazon, even though Amazon has a much bigger distribution network and global reach and all of that. There's not a lot of alternative for Apple, right? Like, certainly, yes, you could buy a device from another giant tech company, but it's not like your mom and pop computer shop is suffering because Apple is selling more iPads and Macs. It's just, there's not really a good analogy.
In the end, the Apple has, if you're buying a Mac, you have to buy an Apple-produced computer, and Apple makes right. money from it. That's just how yeah. it is. Yeah. yeah.
I was going to say, the other interesting tidbit that I thought was kind of an intriguing question came late in the call, where an analyst asked if Apple ever considered making Apple Silicon for essentially other third parties. And
yes.
I don't think anybody thought that was actually going to happen. But it was interesting to hear Tim Cook talk about the reasons, you know, behind why they're switching to Apple Silicon, which is, you know, a lot of what they said at WWDC as well. But it does provide those sort of tantalizing tidbits, as we talked about before, where it's like, hey, there are things we realize we could do if we control the silicon that we could not do before. It enables products that we could mm-hmm. not make. And I think that's a very tempting thing to hear about as we go into this fall quarter and start looking for what the first Apple Silicon Macs to ship.
Yeah, the phrasing, I can pull it right out of my transcript, which is, this two-year effort will achieve both unprecedented performance for the Mac, highlight, and a common architecture across all Apple products. Common architecture benefits Apple more than it benefits yep. the user. But unprecedented performance for the Mac. Again, as somebody who's written two articles, basically wishcasting and dreaming based on a slide that had no labels on a WWDC presentation, I'll just say, if you extrapolate like I did last Friday, and thanks to the reader who suggested that, story. Unprecedented performance for the Mac is really not, it's almost a given. If you if you map out the progress Apple has made up to now on their processors for the iPhone and the iPad, even the A14X iPad chip that presumably would be coming this fall or next spring. So that pace, because remember, it's the A12Z that's in the current iPad Pro. So it's a it's an older chip. But if there's an A14X or A14Z, even that would be faster than almost every MacBook Pro, probably. And if you extrapolate a little bit further and add some cores to a more professional Mac processor on top of that, which I did, you know, you get a very quickly, you get a chip that is faster than every Mac except high-end configurations of the iMac Pro and the Mac Pro.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a lot of questions similar to what we were talking about with the iPhone, right? Where it's like, do you make a smaller device with a bigger screen or a smaller... It's the same question here. It's like, well,
what's the
balance? Do you put in cooling stuff like fans that Macs have traditionally had and get even more performance? Or do you continue making Macs that are small and perhaps even fanless and like maybe don't have quite as good performance as you could get if you put in like active cooling systems, but are still better? If, you know, it's just degrees.
I'm workshopping my wacky conspiracy theory prediction stuff, but here's my workshop version, which is what if Apple makes essentially an iPad chip and that goes in low end systems? And then they make a which is what I. What I called in my little chart last week, the A14X, essentially. It's an iPad chip. But you could put that, or a version of that, in low-end Macs. So think about that. It's basically what's in the iPad Pro, the next iPad Pro. 2021 iPad Pro will have the same chip as this, more or less. And then they make an M14, which people are like, oh, but they have already have an M-series as the mobile coprocessor. I'm saying, well, what if they don't anymore? Because there's no M14 now, and it would keep them in sync. So it's like, elbow that out, M14. I'm going to call it that for now. And that one's got more processor cores. That one's got eight performance cores, let's say. And you use that on your MacBook Pros and maybe your iMacs. And that's the one that would be as fast as the high end. So you could end up with like an iMac that was as fast as or almost as fast as a high end iMac Pro or Mac Pro. But you could put that in a high end MacBook Pro and a high end and the iMac, let's say. So then you've got two chip types. And I think I think there was a reader in the Six Colors member Slack who talked about this. Like, it's two or three. Like, which is it? And my current conspiracy theory workshopping version is maybe that's the 2 years, right? So maybe they do an iPad class chip and a Mac class chip in the 14 generation. And then in the 15 generation, they add a high-end Mac class chip that has even more cores. And this is ATP talked about this a little bit last week. The idea here is that they might use binning to create a high-end Mac chip, but depending and give people at the high end a choice of like, how many cores do you want? You can pay for the super many 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 cores Mac Pro, or you can pay for a fewer cores Mac Pro. And maybe that's a thing that comes a little bit later, is the super, super duper high-end one that's replacing the high-end Pro systems, Pro desktop systems, essentially. But based on the extrapolations I made last week, other than those, it feels like the normal progression of to the A14 and adding some cores will get them coverage on every other Mac model.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because the Mac models have, you know, like you said, they're narrowed a bit, right, in terms of the consumer and pro models, in terms of what's available. And so they can afford to get away with fewer processors. And they were already using fairly, you know, like a lot of Macs used Intel's laptop class processors, even the iMacs at some point, right? Like, so, you know, you could have a pro level chip in like your iMac Pro or your Mac Pro, but most of the other ones use stuff that was kind of lower power because there were other things that Apple considered a bigger benefit there, like not having to cool them as much or lower performance per watt, et cetera. better performance per watt. And so I think that that's a strong argument. I mean, I'm curious to see how they roll it out, because I think the question is, if you take that approach, are you sort of bifurcating into this year, here are our consumer Apple Silicon Max, and next year our Pro Apple Silicon Max, which is plausible, certainly.
I don't know. I mean, is it... most people will not care if the iMac Pro and the Mac Pro don't go Apple Silicon right away.
Yeah.
I think,
because
right?
It's still going to be...
If it's everywhere
all those
else.
Things are still valid, and you,
I think,
you can still use them.
And like I said, I think you could make the argument that you take the iPad class chip and put it in the MacBook Air, and you take a more core class chip and you put it in the MacBook Pro, and you know, maybe that goes in the larger iMac and the other one goes in the smaller iMac. I don't know. Something like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's...
And then you just wait for the Pro class stuff, and maybe that becomes the driver of the 16-inch MacBook Pro in the long run, but not in the short run. But if you can make the 16-inch MacBook Pro faster than the current Intel version just using the, you know, M14 class, then you're there. And I do think, yeah, in the long run, they probably want to offer some core variation on the high end in the Pro models, and maybe even the MacBook Pro, maybe. But in the short term, I don't think it hurts them to say MacBook Air has a processor. 13-inch MacBook Pro, or maybe 13 and 16, have this processor. iMac has this processor. And, like, that's it. You don't get to pick. It just is the processor that comes with it.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think that they will provide the customization levels that they have with Intel.
Yeah.
I don't think that's...
Because now they have to build all those levels themselves, yeah, as opposed to just taking what Intel gives them.
If there's one thing that we know, it's that Apple likes to say, you know, reduce choice and be like, this is the right chip for this computer. This is what you get, right? Like, they want to reduce the number of decisions people make in order to buy a product. They don't want you sitting there endless.
Yeah.
I know that some, and this is going to be upsetting to people who really like picking, including me, who like picking all their memory and storage options and all that, right? Like, but look at the iPad and the iPhone as a comparison, right? All you pick is your color and your storage space. That's it. And I would not wager against that being a similar sort of process for buying Apple Silicon Max. Maybe RAM configuration, but it's going to depend a lot. And like, maybe they have a strong argument for like, look, we've optimized this to work with the amount of RAM that's in there, and we think this will be a great product, and you won't need to expand the RAM. You'll never notice, et cetera.
The Mac OS has more memory management things that require more memory management depending on how you use it. But I think you're right. I think they're going to limit choice. But I think that there's also why turn away money from people who feel like they want to upspec their computers.
Especially buying RAM, which is a great
something that you can make a huge margin on. I think that like it's fine. Like computer users want to spec up the RAM and spec up the storage, right? It's like, sure, we'll let you do that. But the processor is one of those cases where like Apple would have to work hard to replicate what Intel provides, which is different levels.
And
they clearly don't want to do that. They don't do that on the iPhone and the iPad. And I just, even though they do offer that on some Intel systems now, it's just, I look at it and I think that's a way to just differentiate between models. Is the MacBook Air does this and the MacBook Pro does this, and they're different chips, and that's it. And
let me ask you this question, because I think I have a theory about it, but I'm curious to see how yours meshes with mine. Do you think they give clock speeds on these?
Oh, that's interesting. I am going to say no.
That was my assessment as well.
I'm going to say no. I think that they'll say it's the, you know, because what they'll say, they might say cores. I think they're going to say cores, because
yeah,
I think
they'll
the
probably
cores
say
will,
that.
Because they even talk about cores.
Yeah, high efficiency versus performance.
On the A series, right? They talk about cores, but they don't talk about processor speeds. And they have processor speeds, obviously, but they don't talk about them.
You have to. Yeah.
And
people find them.
And you
kind of
don't need to, assuming that everything in one class runs at one speed. So they're like, well, we could tell you what the speed is, but what you really need to know is that this is the 14. Yeah. And the 14 is faster than the 13, and the 13 is faster than the 12. And beyond that, like unless they really want to boast about it, which they might. They might, because never, like somebody was asking me about, like, do we really know that these are going to be better than Intel? And my standard response is, it's Apple's own chips. They don't ever underestimate the ego involved here. Apple's not going to do this unless it's going to make them look good, like on the chip side and the computer side. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it. So they know it's
going to look good.
Just
from a money-making perspective even, right? Like, they're not going to come out with something that, even if it's not about ego, like, they're not going to come out with a worse product. That's
unprecedented.
Just
yeah, but they, you know, given that the shine, it shines on them, not just on their product, but on their chip stuff, like, they're not going to make a move
that all additive for them.
Hurts them. That's stupid. Why would they do that? So yeah, it's going to be better, but their method of just saying, like, look, this is the A14 or the M14 or whatever they call it, like, that's it, right? Because then the next year they'll come out and they'll say, this is the 15, it's better, just like they've done with the iPhone and the iPad. And you don't need the gigahertz. You just need to know they'll put up speed charts and they might talk about cores, and that'll be good for the high end, right? I think ultimately they will use cores in a way, and probably some chip binning kind of stuff. So they're like, well, you can get the 16 core, or the 12 core, or the 10 core, you know, whatever, at the high end, and pay a premium, and that's more money for us in our pocket. Great. Like, that will be a thing that they maybe do. But beyond that, I don't think it's relevant. What are you going to compare it to? It's a different chip architecture. Right. So just say it's the 14. It's 14. It's one more.
Speaking of that,
isn't it?
Speaking of that, here's another. It's one more, isn't it? Speaking of that, I'm also curious to see how they balance the fact that, as they've said, they still have Intel Macs coming, and they are basically having to roll these out at the same time.
Yeah.
So it provides some interesting questions, right? Because part of it may be simply that the models that remain on the Intel chips for now there's no overlap with the models that are being rolled to Apple Silicon, right? It may be the MacBook Air and the MacBook Pro go to Apple Silicon, the iMac and the Mac Mini, I don't know, you know, stay on Intel until they're rolled over next year.
I could be invalidated about this next week, but my guess is that they will introduce Intel Macs, but the moment that they introduce Apple Silicon Macs, they never introduce a new Intel Mac. So they'll be in the channel, but that's what I think. I think the moment that the first Apple Silicon Mac is announced, there will never be an update to any of the models that is Intel. There will be a
transition
dividing
at that point.
So they'll come out with these new rumored iMacs, and they'll be out, and then that'll be it. And we'll never have another
to the Apple Silicon revision of the iMac, basically.
Yeah, and and it's possible that there might be something else there, but isn't it weird? Like, would you speed bump the iMac Pro with a Xeon chip in it in the midst of the Apple Silicon transition? It seems like, you know, just why bother? Just don't bother. They haven't bothered yet, so why would they start now?
It helps avoid awkward questions about, like, why would I buy this thing if there's an Apple Silicon version coming down the line within the next year and a half, right? Like, it's a valid question, right? Like, if we don't, I mean, this is arguing from a position of having not seen these devices, but everything that we do know, based on, you know, the stuff that we're extrapolating, and even based on things like the architecture changes, like, hey, I'll be able to run all my iPad and iPhone apps, you know, that's a huge advantage for a lot of people. And so sitting there going, like, why would I spend thousands of dollars on a machine that can't do that when I know that there is going to be one? I think, you know, managing that message is interesting, too, especially when, as we're discussing, if they do want to boast and put themselves up against performance of previous Macs, having Intel Macs at the same time, you know, it makes it a little more awkward. But again, it depends how they structure it, right? Like, if they avoid having an apples to apples comparison where it's like we're rolling out. They certainly don't want to be in a situation where they're rolling out the same product on both processors. I think that's basically not going to happen, right? They're not going to roll out an Apple Silicon iMac next to an Intel iMac. That would be dumb.
Yeah, that would be dumb.
Like, because they don't want to be put in a position of having to compare it and everyone going, why would I buy that other one?
And if the story is that compatibility is not an issue, then you shouldn't, which it seems like it isn't going to be much of one.
And you certainly want to make that the story.
Yeah. Like. Yeah. So I think it's going to be, there's going to be a curtain. I think that there will be, that we will see some Intel Macs because they've said that there will be some. And then the Apple Silicon Macs will ship and we will never speak again of Intel. I really think it's going to be like that. That
you think, essentially, it sounds like probably no more Intel Macs after the end of this year?
Yeah, I think they, you know, honestly, I think the Mac Mini doesn't need to be updated because, I mean, it always does, but it never is. The iMac Pro needs to be updated, but again, it hasn't been updated ever. The Mac Pro just came out. and they you know they did some different SKUs, but I think they're all GPU based, so, and that's fine. Like new SKUs for the Mac Pro, whatever. But I think not the processors. So what's left? The MacBook Pros both just got an update. The MacBook Air just got an update. The iMac is the only one that's out there, and the rumor is that the iMac is going to get a revision. So yeah. I think the iMac is going to get a revision, and that's it. And there'll never be another iMac or another Intel Mac. That'll be it.
I think that's very plausible. Especially so, it certainly sounds like rumors. Anyways, make it suggested that the MacBook Air and the 13-inch Pro may be the first silicon,
right?
Apple Silicon Macs. Though they just got updates, they got fairly, aside from the keyboard on the MacBook Pro 13, like it wasn't that big an update. So timing-wise, it kind of works.
And again, in talking about my theory, I guess it's not, I mean, everything's a conspiracy, but it's not a conspiracy as much as it is just a wild theory. My wild theory would be, you know, if you do the MacBook Pro and the MacBook Air, maybe when I talk about like iPad class processor versus Mac class processor, I'm really just talking about a 14 class processor with speed cores, process power cores, what do they call
performance
them?
Cores.
Performance cores, that's it. Because I did the math, and the truth is that multiprocessor performance scales with the performance cores. The efficiency cores are nice, but they're not about speed. Like, and I know it's in the name, but like people are like, Bob, but they run at the same time. It's like they do, but really it's not about them. It's about the performance cores. It would be very simple for Apple to ship when you look at like how do they differentiate between the Air and the Pro if they're both shipping on Apple Silicon, because having them do the same chip seems weird. And I think the answer is one of them will have more performance cores than the other one. And that's basically what I mean when I say iPad class versus Mac class is right. If the MacBook Air has essentially the A14X, it's got a 4 performance core processor with a couple of efficiency cores or 2, 4, whatever, however they want to do that. And then the other one, or maybe it's 6. And then the other one has like 8 or 10. And that's the Pro. Like that, that's how those two things differentiate themselves. And it could be that simple, that it's really just one, it's the A14 processor design, and there are a couple of core variations. And yes, it could be binning. It could literally be the same chip, but only 4 of the cores are engaged on this one and all 8 on that one. But if you look at the numbers, that would give you a spectacularly fast MacBook Pro and a pretty fast MacBook Air. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. And it goes along with the fact that obviously they'll have different form factors and probably some other different capabilities as well.
Yeah. And that's the thing that, you know, given what Ming-Chi Kuo has said, it seems to me like they are going to kind of do, at least in part, they're going to do the Intel transition thing again, where they're going to get these chips out with existing designs and then do the redesigns. But, you know, it's, and there's a cat now, a little cat cameo. Very exciting.
Cameo. Cat meow. Cat meow.
Podcasts.
Cat
meow. Well, I leave the door open for this podcast. And
a cat
the cats,
meow cameo.
The cats can come in. Because you mentioned different form factors, different shapes. Like, that's the thing that really fascinates me about this transition is what does it enable? Because it enables, especially on the laptop side, so many different approaches. Like, Apple could completely rethink what the slots for laptops are. And it could be, well, we're going to do an ultralight laptop, and we're going to do a convertible, and we're going to do a big pro development machine. And that's not what we have now with the Air and the Pro. What we have is 3 laptops, one of which is a little bit lighter than the other two, and one of which has a bigger screen than the other two. But it's like, they're not that different in that they're all a laptop, but they could push these products apart more. And I think it'll be interesting to see what they do and how they do it and how they define it. Because even though Apple defines what its products are, the fact is it is working, the raw material it's working with is Intel processors. So like they can't make a product that can't be enabled by an Intel processor. And their own operating system, honestly, is a part of that, too. They can't create a product that Mac OS can't handle, which is, I think, why no touchscreens and convertible Macs up to now. But we're entering an era where Apple makes the silicon and Apple has revised the operating system. And now anything goes. So, like, what is Apple's conception? And that's what, to bring it back to the analyst call, when Tim Cook talks about, you know, being on the same technology platform, enabling features that they haven't been able to enable up to now, that's the kind of stuff I start thinking about, is like, what Apple can now just decide what it wants to make and what for computers, rather than being kind of attached to Intel's product roadmap, right, and the decisions they made in the 90s, essentially, for Mac OS X, back when it was Next Step, right, and then coming over to the Mac.
Well, and I think the other interesting thing to add to the wrinkle here is, obviously, Apple's been working on developing Apple Silicon stuff for a long time, which means, even though the expectation may be what we see is essentially just a continuity with the devices that are already out there, it doesn't necessarily mean that, because whatever devices they do launch in Apple Silicon could have been under development for quite some time.
Yes, indeed. And held back.
And held back, right, exactly. So, you know, I think the field is still wide open as far as that goes, in terms of what these devices are, what they might look like, what functionality they're going to have. I mean, there's other stuff that's kind of in the offing, right? Like, there's been a lot about it's USB 4,
right.
Which is Thunderbolt.
Yeah, and it's backward compatible with Thunderbolt 3, right?
It's so, the thing that is supposedly will hopefully help end some of the headaches about all the various device ports and cables and all that jazz. But, you know, that's something that I have a harder time imagining they're going to want to launch at least some of, like, it's at least a MacBook Pro replacement without pushing that forward a little bit, because that's supposedly due in the fall. I don't know, maybe. I think it's interesting to see, as you say, what are the things that they haven't done yet that would also make it feel like we're distinguishing this product from its predecessor.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about it here, and I did a thing with Mike on Upgrade about it. And we can come up with a list. I hope we're surprised by some stuff. But immediately you start to think about Face ID and convertible Macs. But what else? I mean, and honestly, the one that they've already announced, which is running iOS apps on the Mac, done. That's already announced.
Frankly, I think it's not unlikely that we see a Mac with a cellular connection at some point. They bought a whole cellular modem business.
Although right now they're using Qualcomm's modem, so I don't think they're going to give them that business.
Yeah. No,
but I think once they own their own, once they've built their own 5G, Apple Silicon 5G, why would you not put that in there?
I don't think that's not something that's happening immediately, but I think it's, you don't buy an entire business.
Next year, maybe, but
possibly. I think there's a lot of stuff. I mean, in looking at what the iPad and the iPhone offer, I think is an interesting...
The neural engine stuff, I wonder what other machine learning things they have ideas about that would come. Because the other thing is, it's not just what iPad and iPhone things come to the Mac, right? It's like the beauty of that unified technological platform, which we've said is sort of, that's what Apple cares about. But the beauty of it, and what makes people who buy this stuff care about it, is going to be that maybe not this fall, but some fall to come, maybe next fall, the fall after that, Tim Cook's going to stand on stage, or summer at a WWDC. Tim Cook is going to make these announcements, and he's going to say, here's this brand new Apple thing that we're doing. And they do it in the past and bring it out, and it's on the iPhone, or it's on the iPhone and the iPad. But going forward, when they unveil that thing, it's everywhere, including the Mac, every time. I think, basically, right? Like, we have this big initiative, and it's like, well, you're not limited by your biometrics anymore. You're not limited by your neural engine anymore and all the machine learning you want to do. Like, all of that stuff is now everywhere on every platform. So the Mac doesn't end up being the kind of the sad second cousin who doesn't get the family riches, right? Like,
and the unifying of the code stuff with, you know, things like Catalyst and Swift, et cetera. I mean, you know, we've talked before about how there are Mac apps that got left behind, whether, like, you know, Messages, right? Like, functionality that took so long and didn't show up till Big Sur, because now it's a Catalyst app, basically.
Big Sur Messages, and a little spoiler for my first look about Big Sur whenever Apple does the public beta, because I wrote that this week and last week and the week before, but it's done now. I love Messages on Big Sur. You know, it's not perfect, but, like, Messages, first off, Messages' current version is bad.
Yep.
It's bad. It's really bad. And it's way behind. And the new version is like, it does everything that the iOS version does,
yeah.
And it couldn't be worse, and it's actually a little bit better than the existing one. So, like, and going forward, that's the beauty of it, right, is if any of these technologies is enabled by an app or a series of apps and isn't just, like, in the operating system, well, guess what? They're going to write that app one time. And yeah. It's going to be conceived of from the beginning as spanning all their platforms. And so the Mac version will be there on day one. And maybe it will be, you know, a Mac Catalyst version, but it's going to be built with the Mac in mind from the beginning. And maybe it'll be Swift UI and some combination of who knows what. But, like, they can do that now. And that's very exciting.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think this is when Apple talks about having a common hardware platform, this is the advantage, right?
Yeah.
Like we said, you know, we talked about this a couple of years back, right, about people discussing merging iPad and Mac OS. And I think our argument was always like, look, Apple said that they don't want to do that. But the loophole that of, you know, maintains is that, is there a way for them to not exactly merge them, but create a more of a common underpinning in such a way that they don't have to essentially maintain two separate code bases for everything and essentially maintain multiple big operating platforms that they then have to do separate work on. This reduces the amount of separate work that has to be done. It's not merging them. It's not saying that there isn't still stuff that's going to be, you know, people working on stuff on Mac side and people working on stuff on the iOS and iPad side. But it means that you can reduce a lot of the friction in deploying your same thing to both platforms. And I think that's where Apple has been aiming for a long time, is knowing, like, look, we get a common, you know, common hardware platform. We get a common language for writing apps and deploying them on these things. And that's going to make our life way easier, because it means we don't have to duplicate all of our efforts on everything. We can focus on the things that are really need to be different.
Yeah. And that's how it benefits you as a consumer, is like, I don't really care that it's easier for Apple, but it makes the products better because Apple isn't developing two products. They're developing one.
Right. They don't have to make that decision of where to prioritize. Do we roll out these features to messages on the Mac this year? It's never the priority.
It's never
first. Yeah, it's never first. So I think, you know, this is, we've been talking about this for a long time, but it's a savvy move on Apple's part, because I think it does ultimately benefit pretty much everybody from, you know, the three major constituents, which are Apple, users, and developers.
Yeah.
And I think this helps everybody. And it's going to have some rough patches, let's be clear. Like, anytime you do a transition like this, it's going to be some hiccups. But long term, 5 years out from now, we're all, I think, going to be pretty happy with
the results. In a way better place. Yeah, I agree. Now we just have to wait for it to happen.
It's killing me. I still, you know, again, I'm not going anywhere, but my MacBook Air, I will say, running the Big Sur public beta on my MacBook Air, I picked it up the other night. I'm like, holy crap, this thing is like on fire.
Yeah.
It is so hot. I had to shut down the MacBook Air and just leave it off for a long time, because I was like, you know what? I don't need it. It doesn't need to be on all the time right now, but it has me hoping for that MacBook Air Apple Silicon version in the fall. And I will be first in line.
Sure. Okay, before we go, I have one more thing to talk about, which is sort of what I teased last time, which is,
oh yeah, that's right,
I'm going to announce here for listeners to this podcast, my new project, which comes out Monday at noon Eastern, but I'm going to pre-announce it now, and I'll play a little trailer at the end. I'll put in a trailer, because is it a podcast? Is it a video? Is it writing? The answer, friends, is yes. It's all of those things.
Am I getting it?
Are you getting it yet? It's all of those things, and a floor wax, and a dessert topping. So, I may tell this story again on Upgrade next week, so forgive me if you hear it twice, if you listen to Upgrade, but... my friend Simon Jerry, who was the editor for many years of Macworld UK, and is now, he's a high level, to this day, an IDG executive in London, great guy. And he wrote his editor's column in Macworld UK as a grand tradition of editors not knowing what to write about month to month, came up with the idea of something that he called Apple A to Z. That's Z for Americans. And it was basically, he wrote a column about each letter of the alphabet and how it related to Apple, So he would just like old product names and technologies and stuff. It was cute. And I always thought it was a very clever idea. And I told him he ought to do, especially when we were making a lot of ebooks at Macworld back in the day, I said, you ought to bundle this up and sell this as like a book or an ebook or something like that. And he never did. I still bug him about it. If he owned the rights, I would say, let's make a book of this, because it was really fun, an updated version. And I thought to myself, I would love to do a project like that, where it's like multiple things in a series. I think that would be fun. And I just filed it away. It's like, I should do that. I put it on my little story list of like, oh, a project like Apple A to Z. Let's do that. And I was reading, so Joe Posnanski, sports writer for The Athletic, did a series this spring called The Baseball 100, which he's tried a couple of times, and he was doing it on his site, and then he sort of restarted it on The Athletic. But I was always impressed by that idea. He wrote from countdown from 100 to one of the greatest baseball players of all time. And what Joe Posnanski learned is that not only was it a great just excuse to write essays about stuff that you were interested in, like baseball players in his case, and baseball history and issues, and you know, he took it in lots of different directions. But what we also learned is that by creating an arbitrarily numbered list, you get a lot of people talking about it. And I thought, well, that would be fun too. If I do a thing, if I can do it as a list, like a countdown list, then everybody can point out all the ways that my decisions are wrong, which is fun because everybody gets to make their own list, right? It's not, I'm not saying this is definitive. It's my list and I chose to make it. So that's what I did. And the project is called 20 Macs for 2020. And it is a list of the 20 most, oh, what's the word I used? I got to look it up now. I used the biggest cop-out word possible. notable. 20 most notable Macs ever made. Are they the best? Yeah, some. Are they the worst? Some. Are they the weirdest? Some. are they ones that I just have a great fondness for because of nostalgia? Some. Yes, all of those things are in there. But what I did is I constructed a list of 20 Macs. Because I thought early on, I was like, oh, new decade, 2020, I'll give me my project for the year. I'll start it early in the year. That didn't happen. but I'm going to do it. It's called 20 Macs for 2020, and it comes out starting Monday, and I will be revealing number 20.
20 Macs enter. 20 Macs leave.
20 Macs leave.
It's not that kind of competition.
Once every week. Yeah, exactly right. So on Monday, I will start off the list with number 20. Ironically, many podcast apps will say, oh, episode 1 is number 20. And yes, that's true. But you know what? Episode 20 will be number 1. And then every week, I will do another, I will count down another Mac from my arbitrary list. And what you will get is an essay by me about that Mac that I will post on Six Colors. You will get a video produced in collaboration with Stephen Hackett of 512 Pixels, where Stephen and I talk, and he's got most of these. Although I have bought a couple computers on eBay lately. he and I will talk.
Oh no, the disease is spreading.
Talk a little bit and show the videos of these computers and pictures and videos of like Stephen's archive. And we'll just talk a little bit about them. And so that's like a little YouTube video that we're going to do. They're not very long. It's like 5 minutes long, 4 minutes long. And then there's a podcast. And the podcast is me telling the story of these old Macs and new Macs or whatever. Macs. I'm not going to say olds because they're not all old. Some of them are. Some of them aren't. With people I know who also have been observing the Mac over the course of all of this time. And those are more like, the first one's long, but most of those are like 13 minutes long. So they're these short, more highly edited sort of like podcast essays about these things. So it's a multimedia extravaganza, 20 Macs for 2020. And if you wonder where to get them, there will be a, you know, 512 Pixels is where those videos are going to go. And Steven's going to make a YouTube playlist of them as well. And I'll link to those from my essay, which will be appearing on Six Colors. This should all happen every Monday for the next 20 weeks, starting Monday. And then the podcast, here's the deal with the podcast. So the podcast will be publicly available on Relay FM, but what I'm going to do is on the Monday, I'm going to post it in a feed that is just for supporters of Six Colors. So that's everybody listening to this podcast. And it will also be available to supporters of Upgrade on Relay FM. And you'll get those episodes on the Monday. and the public will see them in the public feed later in the week, I think probably Friday. So you're going to get advanced access to the podcast as part, because I wanted to do something that was extra for the people who support Six Colors or Upgrade. And so I decided to do it with the podcast. So Monday, I'll post a thing on Six Colors about this, and you can go look for it. And there'll be a link you can click on in the member center that will let you get a feed URL for the podcast. And you can listen to that episode, number 20, right away. And the rest of the world will see it later.
So Jason, yeah. let me ask you, are you at all worried? I just did the math. So if you start on Monday and you go for 20 weeks, you're ending it basically the end of the year, a little bit around there.
I've got a little bit of, what I didn't do, Dan, is start this so that I only have exactly 20 weeks until the end of the year. But yes, the plan right now is to finish on December 14th. So I only have a couple of weeks of slack time in there should I face a delay.
But, and then here's the most relevant question. What if Apple releases a new Mac between now and the end of the year that is so good that it needs to be on the 20 greatest Mac list?
It's going to have to wait for the next list.
Okay. All right. I just want to check.
I do fully anticipate that after number one, the next episode of an essay and everything is going to be everything I left off that everybody has convinced me was stupid and I shouldn't have left it off. I'm already compiling that list as I talk to all these people.
Excellent.
For the podcast. Including
it's
you.
It's tough. It's a moving target, so you know.
I have done, it's mostly, so it started out as being, I wanted to write essays about Macs that I knew. I have a big archive of like old Macworld and Mac User and Mac Week that I was going to look through and like what did people say back in the day about some of these. They're the ones that we covered at Macworld that I'm like, oh, well, I can tell a story about that. I thought, okay, well, this is really great. What I didn't anticipate is that there are a few cases where I have already had to track down people who were involved in them. I had one in particular, which is not going to come up for a few weeks, where I couldn't get an answer about this thing. I was like, I wanted to say, like, was this invented here or was it invented by these people? How was that story? And I ended up going on LinkedIn and finding people who worked at that company and sending them messages saying, do you know the story here? And then ultimately talking to somebody who basically worked on that product to tell me what actually happened. I wasn't planning on doing reporting like that. I was planning on doing some research, but I wasn't planning on doing reporting. And I ended up, I have done a little bit of reporting, but it's, you know, I'm not trying to write the definitive history of any of these products. I'm trying to give people some entertaining tidbits about the context or remind them about a bit of history that they may have forgotten or may have remembered wrong. And then to soothe your fears, Dan, of the dangers of hitting 20 straight weeks of a project, which, believe me, I have been well aware of all along. I will say, and people on this podcast have heard me say this about projects I'm working on in the background, half of these essays are already written.
Mm-hmm.
Six of these videos are already done. Four of these podcasts are already finished, and I've done interviews for the following five. So it's not that I fully anticipate that sometime in October or November, I'm going to be down to the wire on one of these streams where I'm going to be like, oh God, I need a video next week. I don't have anything. Right. And I'll have to scramble and do that. But I'm trying to get ahead here so that I can pace myself so that I can get to the end, because I'll also point out Joe Posnanski did the baseball 104 times before he finally got to number one. So, and that is not my intent. I intend to get to number one on December 14th. And by the time we get there, it will be obvious what number one is, but, you know, but people will argue and complain, and I hope that happens. I want people to argue, complain, make their own lists, speculate about what is to come. That would be hilarious. If somebody wants to speculate about the list, that'll be great. I'll look at those and I'll laugh, and somebody will probably get it right, and that's fine too. But anyway, that's 20 Max for 2020. It's going to start Monday. And since you're listening to this podcast, you'll get it all every Monday. You just have to sign up for the 20 Max podcast feed at Six Colors, and it'll be there on Monday when I started out. That's it.
That's something to look forward to in these weird times.
I hope it's fun. You know, I hope it's fun. I hope people like it. And when I originally was just going to be essays, and I decided at some point, well, if I'm going to do this, I ought to do it. Like, I ought to do the podcast part and the video part too, And so I am. In hindsight, I might be like, why did you make that much extra work for yourself? But like, I thought it would be fun and I thought it could be good. And I'm actually really happy with how the podcasts are turning out. Yeah, I hope people like them. So I'll play at the end of this after By Dan, By Jason, I'll play the trailer for it. And then Monday you can go, sign up and get the whole thing sometime. Cool. Monday, maybe sooner. I don't know. I'll flip that switch, but Monday is when this is all launching. So yeah, that's what I've been doing. Actually, I have another project too, but that project is kind of on hold as I get this project out there. So this is the big one. So yeah, you know, I needed something to do, Dan.
Sure. Yeah. You're usually not very busy. So that seems right.
Yeah, but it's been fun. And you're in the podcast. You're one of the voices in the podcast.
Yes, it's true. I'm a voice.
I might actually need you to take some pictures of a computer that you own that I'm not going to mention what model it is, but I might need you to send me some pictures and some video of a computer that's in your house.
Sure.
Yeah, so that's I'm putting my daughter to work editing some of those videos. Brian Hamilton has come in to do some work on the editing. Nice. I've got some stories about how those podcasts got put together that I'll tell at another time, but I use some tools I've never used before and I am really happy with them, and so I want to talk about that at some point too.
I will say along those front, it's only ancillary connected, but this year because of us all being apart, one of my cousins has taken upon herself for basically everybody's birthday to put together videos and solicit videos from everybody in the family, and then she'll edit them together. And like, it's fun to watch. Some of us have gotten increasingly into it as time has gone by, and we've done like half a dozen of these now. So like the last one that my wife and I did was all detective themed, and we did a Nick and Nora Charles, like the Thin Man style. I filmed it. We did it black and white in 24 FPS on the iPhone, and put in like, you know, film grain and old timey music and all of this. And I'm like, oh man, it's nice to find a new tools and that enable you to do fun things and projects.
Exactly. So that's what I wanted to challenge myself with a long-term project, and this is it. So here we are.
Nice.
And if it goes well, maybe it'll be 21 somethings in 2021. I don't know. But if it doesn't, then I won't.
We'll never speak of it again.
And we'll never speak of it again, no. All right. Well, I think that's it for now. And I'll just play that clip after we're done. But we'll be back next week because calendar demands it, right? Right?
Indeed. Calendar.
All right. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.
Welcome to 20 Macs for 2020. I'm Jason Snell. I've owned Macs since 1990 and have been writing about them since 1993, which means I've been a professional observer of the Mac for three quarters of its life. Now, the funny thing about sticking around that long is it gives you a deeper perspective on history. With this year marking the turn of decades and a bunch of other terrible stuff too, I have decided to have a little fun and construct a list of the 20 most notable Macs in history. And over the next 20 weeks, this podcast will cover all of them, counting down to number one. Now please note my choice of words there. Notable Macs of history. I'm not saying these are my favorites. A bunch of these, in fact, I only knew in passing and never used myself. I'm also not saying these are the best Macs ever. That is a really hard thing to measure because, with a few obvious exceptions, the best Macs are generally the most recent ones. Otherwise, you'd all still be using a G3 iMac, and you're not. My ranking system is completely arbitrary. I tried to make a list of Macs that I felt reflected its history over the last 36 years. I wanted to choose Macs that were popular, or revolutionary, or weird, or had an interesting story to tell. I'm sure one of the most popular things about this entire series is going to be the arguments about my terrible rankings and my unforgivable omissions. To this, I can only say, my rankings may be terrible and my omissions unforgivable, but they are mine. Play along, make your own lists, post them to the internet, see if everyone agrees with it. Pro tip, they won't. Anyway, to take this walk down memory lane, I read through a lot of back issues of Macworld, Mac User, and Mac Week, picked up a few books, and I've gotten the chance to talk to many of my distinguished Mac journalism colleagues. I appreciate their contributions to this project. Now, beyond the arguments about my terrible list making, I hope the results of this project will expose some Mac history that deserves to be brought back into the light while entertaining along the way.